We really want to create a safe context for individuals to make mistakes so that they can learn that they are capable of fixing mistakes.
Welcome back to the Upper Grand District School Board Social Learning Podcast. Last episode, we chatted about areas of social learning, including the importance of visual referencing and supporting our students' use of their episodic memory to help them with problem solving. In this episode, we're going to continue our exploration of components of social competence that are fostered by the use of declarative language, including appreciating differences, making mistakes, and thinking in alternatives. We are joined today by Linda Murphy, the author of the Declarative Language Handbook, and by Jenny Marino, who is the Mental Health Lead and Manager of Mental Health and Addictions with the Upper Grand District School Board. We thought it would be a great opportunity to discuss declarative language through the lens of promoting mental health. So welcome, Jenny, and welcome back, Linda.
Thank you.
So in the Declarative Language Handbook, Linda, you often talk about the fight, flight, freeze response in kids with social learning challenges. Can you help us understand why that is?
Yeah, so I think we have been talking about how certain communication styles can place a demand on a student in the moment, which they may or may not feel equipped to handle or may not have the time to process and respond. So when we place a demand on an individual, it can create a stress response, and that stress response can lead to a fight, flight, freeze, or sometimes fawn, which is another stress response that I don't have in my book, but I also think it's important. And what these are just observable behaviors that we might see. They present as challenging behaviors. So for example, a fight response might be if a child is arguing, yelling, perhaps aggressive. A flight response might be when somebody tries to bolt or leave a situation, maybe even hide under a table. A freeze response might just look like deer in the headlights, like it looks like the student is not attending to us, or it may look like they're ignoring, but really it's a panic and a freeze in the moment. And then fourth is a fawn response, which just means people pleasing. So sometimes when an individual feels stress, they might go along with something, even though it's not what they would want to do, or feels uncomfortable to them in some way. So when a demand is placed on an individual that they don't feel equipped to handle or don't have the time to process and respond to, those are some of the things that we might see.
So it can be quite a complex response. And sometimes It's probably very hard to tease out which is an authentic response versus a challenge for the student. So how can using declarative language change this response for children who are struggling to appreciate that other people are thinking differently from them?
Yeah. So again, with declarative language, what we're shifting is a communication style from one that might be demanding to one that's invitational and gives time and space to process and respond. If we come in quickly with an opinion or an agenda that might be different from what that student's experience is, that one of those defensive or stress responses can occur, or that's what we might see. So an example might be if a student, if a teacher is saying, what does your friend think about that? Or maybe even in literature, asking someone to comment on another person's or a character's perspective in the moment when it might be different from their own. And I know we talked about this before, but it's so much of it is woven together. Like that even pulls in episodic memory. Like, do I have experiences that are similar to this character's experience enough so that I can pull from my knowledge and experiences to comment on what this person might be experiencing? So anytime we ask a student to consider or come up with what another person's perspective might be, it creates this demand that they may not be equipped to respond to for a lot of different reasons. So what I like to think about with declarative language is we really and truly just want to create this space where it's safe to observe different experiences. It's safe to observe different perspectives and just create that space where a student can take in that information, but not necessarily need to act upon it or respond to it or come up with the answer to those types of questions. We just want to help them feel safe around this information that might be novel and different from their own experiences, that allows them time to process and integrate that with their understanding of the world.
Along those lines, around the fight, flight, freeze, we often see that response in children when they realize they've made a mistake or maybe having an anxious response to something that has happened or is happening. And sometimes as adults, we're quick to anticipate that challenge and sometimes swoop in and try and fix or even remove it from in front of the student or the child. In the Declarative Language Handbook, you talk about the importance of letting these moments happen in safe ways, and that this ultimately builds some really important skills. And that is a really powerful thing to me, learning about that through the book and understanding the interconnectedness with a lot of the work we do in mentally healthy classrooms. Can you elaborate on this concept a little bit more?
Yeah, and I think there's two different situations maybe that I might see. One might be where the grown-up comes in and fixes the mistake so that stress is not felt, maybe, or that challenge is not experienced to move through the mistake and learn how to fix it. But the other might be where the correct answer is prompted really quickly, which can be disempowering to a student. So basically, what I think about is that we really want to create a safe context for individuals to make mistakes so that they can learn that they are capable of fixing mistakes. You know, we all might experience mistakes throughout our life. Like, the goal in life is not to be perfect. The goal in life is to feel okay when we mess up and figure out what we need to do to navigate that, to get back on track. Perhaps that means seek help if we need it. Perhaps it means problem solving on our own to figure out what we need to do differently. But if any time the correct answer is prompted really quickly, or the grown-up comes in and fixes the mistake, then we really are taking away that opportunity for discovery, that more dynamic process of navigating a breakdown or a mistake and figuring out the repair, which are the life skills that are needed as we all grow and enter more complex situations.
I love that. I love the allowing the opportunity to build the skill, because you can't do that if you're not ever faced with the situation. And I also love the fact that in order to do all of this, you need that connection with students so that they feel they have the space to engage in that safely and then therefore build those skills. Just love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to that also is like our timing and all of that. So how we want to scoop in or swoop in and, you know, fix things, but then how can we adjust our timing to support the students in a way that is successful for them?
Yeah. And so one thing that I'm just always thinking about with these concepts, declarative language, co-regulation that we'll get to, is just the idea of processing and really trying to be in tune with the processing style of the student that we're with. So that means we're really thinking about when they're thinking. We're thinking about when they might be ready for new information and not giving it to them at a time that they're not ready for it, because that would create more of a defensive reaction. So I'll just try and make this real or give an example. You know, say a student is doing a math problem and you see them moving through it and you see them make a mistake. Say they're doing like addition with double digits or something like that. And you see the mistake. So if you were to correct the mistake immediately after it happened, but before the student finishes the problem, that's going to interrupt the thought process or the flow that the child is in the middle of. And it's also going to be a bit disempowering. So they might end up shutting down. And it's not that we don't want them to learn. We, of course, do. But if we let them, if we work hard to not interrupt the flow of their thinking where it might be, and notice just their nonverbal cues, where are they in that process, then we can think about, okay, I do want to give them feedback about this math problem, but what's the best time to give it? Is it when they're in the middle of the problem, or might it be okay to wait until they finish it? And what I usually might do is I might wait for them to finish that math problem, and then I could give them the opportunity to discover the mistake on their own. So I could say something like, you know, I'd love for you to double check that, because I think there might be one number off. I'm here if you need help. And then again, you're giving them time and space to discover that mistake on their own, which is way more empowering than if I just come in and tell them it's wrong or tell them what the right answer is. Or if they're struggling and they need a bit more scaffolding, it could be something like, you know, I do see a mistake and I'd love to go through it with you if that's okay with you. And then you're almost giving them space to say, yes, I would like your help, or yes, I'm ready to receive your help. And it just honors their ability to persist if that's what they want to do. And it creates that space for them to be way more open to receiving the information that you're giving. Because I think if we give information prematurely, then kids either are not open to it or they might shut down. So that's how I think about those things. It's really great to wait and let them move through it, discover if they can on their own, but then use guiding statements to let them know you're here and you'd love to show them as they're ready.
Yeah. And I love that phrase, I'm here to help if you need it. It gives them the control of the situation versus us that swooping in and fixing things so much for them. Yeah. So through the use of declarative language, we can help guide a child through the situation and allow them to develop some problem-solving skills. How can we use declarative language statements to guide a student through this type of thinking?
Yeah, so it's always going to depend on the problem at hand. I'm going to weave back episodic memory a little bit because I know this can come into it. There could be a moment where we're faced with a problem, but we know as the educator, we've had a similar but different situation in our past. So it might just be something like using a declarative statement like, you know, I remember something similar to this happened last week too. Let's see if we can remember together what we did then. Or if something breaks, like a concrete example could be, you know, I remember last time this broke, we found some tape. And then you're even guiding them toward a solution that might be just right. In that the next chapter in the book, just where we're thinking about alternative thinking and possibilities, it might be a matter of we have a problem at hand. And what is a really great process is just to brainstorm possible solutions to that problem and then pick the best fit. So it could be something like, oh, we do have a problem. Let's see if we can brainstorm together different possible ideas of what we could do next. And then we can decide together which one feels best for right now.
I love that. And it makes me wonder because a lot of what we're hearing in the use of declarative language and understanding through the book too, is that this is going to benefit all students, not just the ones that are struggling in those moments or et cetera. And I'm wondering if you could help us understand how to use declarative language and develop those problem-solving skills and other skills as a whole classroom.
Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine there's so many problems that come up throughout the day that the teacher might just solve to quickly move through it. And of course, you have your time constraints and you have to do what you have to do, and that's okay. But perhaps the next time one of these problems comes up, the teacher in the classroom could think, you know, might this be an opportunity that I can engage the students in the problem-solving process and either talk out loud about how I'm thinking about the problem, approaching the problem, thinking about what I might do and just narrate their thoughts so that everybody can see the process that the teacher is moving through. And it could be even something so small like, oh gosh, it's raining out today, so we might not be able to go outside for recess. Here are the things I'm thinking about what we can do instead. So it's something that small that might be invisible to the students, but as the teacher uses declarative language out loud to narrate their process in problem solving, the students are going to learn from it. But then it also is really great when it's possible to engage the students in the process of the problem solving, whatever it might be. So even if it's that same example, the teacher could say something like, wow, it's raining out. I think that means we probably can't go outside today. How about we brainstorm together about things that we could do instead during recess and let kids contribute in that way to just brainstorming solutions and then picking the best fit for that moment in time.
Right. I love that. I love the power of modeling and just wondering out loud and how much that can impact the students as a whole. And then they can bring that into their individual interactions as well as they learn it more and more.
Right. Yeah.
And using that kind of language in the classroom can change the overall vibe in the classroom, like a much calmer, safe space for kids to make those, you know, ask those questions or do that problem solving.
Yeah.
And a sense of community too, because you're all collaborating together.
And it also really models that we don't have to panic when there's a problem. We all can work together to figure out the next steps to navigate it. So it really shows students that change or problems that occur are manageable. We can figure it out. It requires teachers letting go a little bit and just making that process transparent, which might feel hard, but it ends up being a really wonderful thing because everybody learns and then does not feel scared when there's a moment of change or a problem at hand.
A much, much calmer classroom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Linda, for this great information on how we can make mistakes and think differently about things and problem solve using declarative language. And thanks, Jenny, for joining us today so we have a better understanding of how mental health and well-being can be impacted by the use of declarative language.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Social Learning Road Trip, a podcast presented by Upper Grand District School Board. For educators within our board, you can access show notes and links to our other podcast episodes on our SharePoint page under Innovation Lab. Other listeners can find our podcast and additional information on our parent website at www.ugdsb.ca/CLS parents. If you would like to find out more information about declarative language and co-regulation, please visit Linda Murphy's site at declarativelanguage.com.